Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute, Center for Science and Culture. On this podcast, we have with us once again Mr. Michael Flannery, author of Alfred Russel Wallace's Theory of Intelligent Evolution, How Wallace's World of Life Challenged Darwinism. This is our fourth podcast with Michael Flannery, talking about his book that discusses the role of Alfred Russel Wallace, the late 19th and early 20th century naturalist who actually co-discovered the theory of evolution by natural selection with Charles Darwin. Michael Flannery's latest book is published by Erasmus Press, and the website for that is www.erasmuspress.net. To give a little bit about Michael Flannery, he's professor and associate director for historical collections at the Lister Hill Library of Health Sciences at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. He's originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, and he holds two master's degrees, one in library science from the University of Kentucky and another in history from California State University, Dominguez Hills. He's also quite an accomplished writer. He's written seven books, and in 2001, he won the prestigious Edward Kramer's Award for Distinguished Writing by an American from the American Institute of the History of Pharmacy, and in 2006, he won the Publications Award of the Archivists and Librarians in the History of Health Sciences. This latest book, Alfred Russel Wallace's Theory of Intelligent Evolution, is his seventh book, and he's written a bit on Alfred Russel Wallace in the popular media as well. He had an article in Forbes magazine online titled Alfred Russel Wallace this past February 12, 2009, in honor of Darwin's 200th birthday, and this book is a real gem. When I first read his book, Alfred Russel Wallace's Theory of Intelligent Evolution, How Wallace's World of Life Challenged Darwinism, I thought that it was actually sort of a biography of Alfred Russel Wallace, talking about Wallace's thinking and his intellectual ideas and how they served as a template for modern ID thinking. And he certainly does do that in his book. He talks about Wallace. It has a lovely biography of Darwin as well, comparing Wallace and Darwin's upbringing and their social status and how that influenced their views. But really, the second section of the book is a book by Alfred Russel Wallace, which Michael Flannery has edited. It's called Wallace's The World of Life, where Wallace discusses his views of intelligent design in a number of different areas, a number of different scientific fields, ranging from physics and cosmology to biology. And it's really quite an interesting read. It's certainly not identical to a lot of modern ID thinking, but much of what we see in his book, as Michael Flannery says, could be almost seen as a preamble to intelligent design. So it's really great to have you back on the show with us today, Michael Flannery, to talk more about Alfred Russel Wallace.
Thank you, Casey.
In the last podcast, we started to get into some of Wallace's views of intelligent evolution in biology, and I want to continue on that theme in this podcast and ask you some questions about some statements that Wallace writes in his book. Wallace states in his book that while variation in natural selection can explain how life forms become adapted to an ever-changing surface of the Earth, there's more to it. In particular, he states, quote, "The remote but more fundamental cause, which has been comparatively little attended to, is the existence of a special group of elements possessing such exceptional and altogether extraordinary properties as to render possible the existence of vegetable and animal life forms. These elements correspond roughly to the fuel, the iron, and the water which render a steam engine possible. But the powers, the complexities, and the results are millions of times greater in the former, and we may presume that the mind which first caused these elements to exist and then built them up into such marvelous living, moving, self-supporting, and self-reproducing structures must be many millions of times greater than those which conceived and executed the modern steam engine." And this is a pretty stark and striking statement, and to me it sounds like Wallace believes in a pretty direct and almost interventionist sort of design for the origin of the first life, and perhaps even some front-loaded design throughout the diversification of life. Would you agree with that, and how would you characterize Wallace's view of design in light of this passage?
Well, I would agree with that. Wallace was interviewed for the Daily Chronicle in November of 1910, actually just 1 month before The World of Life came out. The World of Life was published in December of 1910. And he was asked how he explained life on Earth. And really, to paraphrase Wallace, he replied that it was a very simple and, in his words, rather old-fashioned explanation, namely that at a certain stage of the Earth's development, there was a definite act of creation. He says something, some power was exercised from without, maybe through some laws or processes not fully understood, but this power gave life to Earth. Actually, he's worth quoting here. He says, all errors of those who have distorted the thesis of evolution into something called, inappropriately enough, Darwinism, have arisen from the supposition that life is a consequence of organization. This is unthinkable. Postulate organization first and make it the origin and cause of life, and you lose yourself in a maze of madness. An honest and unswerving scrutiny of nature forces upon the mind this certain truth, that at some period of the Earth's history there was an act of creation giving to the Earth of something which it had not possessed before, and a gift, the gift of life, has come from that gift, the infinite and wonderful population of living forms. Then he said there was, in effect, a second act of creation, and this is in some ways interesting and equally important, and that's the bestowing upon some early hominid form, a spirit or soul, and man was then first brought to Earth. Now, it's important to point out that Wallace isn't saying, like Darwin, that man came from beasts. He's saying that in some essential transformative way, the hominid ceased to be beast and became man. Wallace concluded by mentioning that the difference between man and beast was so fundamental as to be completely unbridgeable. His answer was unequivocal and sufficiently clear, I think, to remove all doubt that Wallace's views were certainly not vitalistic or materialistic, and that he was really an unmistakable theist.
You also write in your book, quote, "It should strike both ID proponents and critics alike as significant that the first intelligent design challenge to Darwinism came in the form of intelligent evolution from the very man who is credited with the co-discovery of natural selection, and he issued this challenge on the basis of the limitations of the principle of utility," unquote. How does Wallace's existence and his own views challenge the myths that ID critics often put forth about intelligent design today?
Well, I think I might have mentioned this in an earlier podcast, but it's definitely worth repeating, and that is that the opponents of ID are faced with Wallace, with a non-Christian, non-biblical evolutionist who not only independently discovered natural selection, but came to a view of nature imbued with intelligent design. The old evolution versus creationism claim repeated by Darwinists is utterly inaccurate, and it's completely unhistorical. Faced with Wallace, they have to admit three important things. First, it's possible to believe in evolution without subscribing to Darwinism. This constant conflation of evolution with Darwinism is just completely wrong and wrong-headed. The second important thing that they'll be forced to admit is that ID is not, nor was it from the beginning, creationist. And last but not least, ID was derived from scientific observations more than 100 years ago by Alfred Russel Wallace. And in fact, I would even say that when you look at Alfred Russel Wallace, Wallace came to his metaphysic, his idea of theism, through his science, whereas Darwin came to his science by way of his metaphysics.
What you have just said in answer to this question, I think, is really the take-home message of your book and of any intelligent design proponent who is studying Alfred Russel Wallace. I have really found this fascinating to see how Wallace really explodes many of the common myths and criticisms of ID that are put out by ID's critics. And I think that it just shows that this early figure in intelligent design thinking does not fit the mold of the biblical Christian creationist who tries to equate intelligent design with some form of young earth creationism. I mean, this is the last thing that Alfred Russel Wallace was, and I think that a lot of ID proponents follow in the tradition of Alfred Russel Wallace, whatever their own personal religious beliefs may be. The intelligent design that they are promoting does not fit into the creationist mold that many critics want to put it into. And so I just want our listeners to understand that what you just said, I really think, should be the take-home message of these podcasts about Alfred Russel Wallace. But go ahead and continue, though.
Well, Casey, you're absolutely right, and in fact, it's one of the reasons I wrote the book. You look at how the popular media and how this debate is often contextualized, and you realize it's utterly ahistorical, and it's just utterly conflated. I think, quite frankly, I mean, and I'm principally a historian here, so I approach Darwin from the same way I approach Wallace. In what way, as historical figures, have they made an important impact, and in what way have those impacts affected us? And when I look at Wallace and Darwin juxtaposed to one another and see how the popular media actually contextualizes the argument, and most of all, the Darwinists themselves, when they equate ID with creationism, it's their particular particular notion of creationism. I mean, it's not even the very accurate view of creationism all the time. But what they're actually doing is they're trying to create or turn ID into a straw man that they can easily knock down. And it's not that simple. And they're actually heading down the wrong path. And nothing will underscore that greater, I think, than understanding Alfred Russel Wallace, co-discoverer of natural selection, within a context of intelligent design and within a context of being really quite critical of the materialistic formulations that are implicit in Darwinian evolution.
Well, to talk about one final passage from your book, I think, as I mentioned in an earlier podcast, there's some striking scientific descriptions of biological features and processes in Wallace's book, The World of Life, that you edit and put at the end of your new book, Alfred Russel Wallace's Theory of Intelligent Evolution. And some of these pertain to descriptions of the feather, of insects, of plants. And in Wallace's The World of Life, he says, in reference to the varied useful products of plant life, that, quote, quite as clearly, perhaps even more clearly, than for the development of the bird's feather, of the insect's transformations, does the agency of a supreme mind seem to be essential. What exactly is he saying there?
Well, Wallace is referring to the fact that the elaborate development of a vast vegetable kingdom out of a comparatively few elemental substances at its disposal cannot be explained completely through naturalistic means. So he's really applying the same principle that he did to animal life, now to plant life. Wallace's line of discussion that follows is interesting here because he cites Kerner's vital force. But as I've shown in, I think, an earlier broadcast, that he rejected vital force as an inadequate explanation. He then goes on to point out that even Darwin's pangenesis theory, Darwin's old discredited notion based on inheritance of acquired characteristics, even if true, would not be an explanation, because it would not account for the forces, the directive agency, and the organizing power, which are essential features of growth. Wallace appeals to an organizing mind and a directive power and calls unknown forces some rudimentary mind and cell or atom vague and petty suppositions. To Wallace, he instead calls upon a vast intelligence, some pervading spirit is required to guide these lower forces in accordance with a preordained, it's an interesting word, preordained system of evolution of the organic world. And he caps this off by insisting that we as humans are the pinnacle of this development, and he sees humankind as living on in a, in his words, higher state of existence in eternity.
So a final question I want to ask you, Mr. Flannery, is simply, what is your favorite passage out of Wallace's The World of Life?
There are many, but I would suppose his very last lines, where he closes after reiterating the role of what he calls the infinite and eternal being in a whole hierarchy of angelic beings by saying, and I'll just quote from him here, "This is the best approximation we are now able to formulate as to the deeper, the more fundamental causes of matter and force, of life and consciousness, and of man himself, at his best, already a little lower than the angels and like them, destined to a permanent progressive existence in a world of spirit." He ends not with an absolute certainty, but with a modesty, I think, that's befitting a scientist who spent his life confronting the rich creative diversity of life. And then he ends by referencing, really quite frankly, Psalm 8, verse 5, by referring to man, which significantly, I think, he capitalizes as a little lower than the angels, concluding not with the world of life, but with where he ultimately sees the world of life heading, and that's toward the world of spirit. So starting with the world of life, Wallace ends with the world of spirit, and more importantly, Wallace restores man. And I think the real reason I like this passage is that Wallace clearly, in those closing lines, restores man to the position he was accorded in the great scala natura, the great scale of nature. It was as if Wallace got the last word in on Darwin's descent of man. Humankind is not just a kind of animal without spirit, without purpose. For Wallace and for so many through the ages, humanity is special and specially endowed with spiritual capacities unknown to the animal kingdom. The practical results of this recognition of the special place of man has always carried with it profound ethical and moral implications, as indeed did Darwin's demotion of man as a mere pawn in the flotsam and jetsam of chance and necessity. Wallace nowhere stands out in my mind in greater distinction to Darwin than he does in those closing passages.
I think this is absolutely fascinating, Mr. Michael Flannery. Your book, Alfred Russel Wallace's Theory of Intelligent Evolution, How Wallace's World of Life Challenged Darwinism, is truly a very unique and important contribution to the intelligent design literature. I would encourage our listeners, any of our listeners who are interested in ID, especially those who are interested in the history of ID, to read your book. It's published by Erasmus Press. The website, again, is erasmuspress.net. And your book can also be found on Amazon.com. Is that right?
Yes, it can.
And the foreword of your book, by the way, is written by William Dembski. So this is a truly enlightening book. I think that I've learned a lot personally from reading your book about the important role that Alfred Russel Wallace has played as a progenitor to intelligent design thinking. And certainly it just helps to reconfirm that intelligent design is not simply repackaged creationism. And I really appreciate the time and the effort you put into this fascinating book. And I hope you'll continue to do work on this topic, Mr. Flannery.
Well, I do. I'm still interested. It's an ongoing interest, but I definitely thank you for this opportunity to really tell the Wallace story.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. Again, this is part four of a four-part series on Alfred Russel Wallace. The book is, again, Alfred Russel Wallace's Theory of Intelligent Evolution, How Wallace's World of Life Challenged Darwinism, written by Michael A. Flannery. Go check it out. This is a book that you will not regret taking the time to read. I'm Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.